Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juneau, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Today, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Judges with The Courage of Gideon. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Many thanks, Bob. We have been studying the book of Judges, where we have a brief record of the early history, the first centuries of the land of Israel. And in this book, God chose leaders called judges who ruled under Jehovah, the king. And through the lives and work of these judges, we learn about God's works and ways. And we have come up to the fifth judge, Gideon. And we see at the time of his call, Israel was being oppressed terribly by Midian, another nation descended from Abraham. They were coming into Israel, not just to steal from them, not just to pillage and loot, but they were actually destroying Israel's crops systematically, basically trying to wipe them out, cause them all to die of starvation. So today we might call this attempted genocide. They were just plain trying to wipe out Israel. Now Gideon, we saw, was a man of Manasseh, one of the tribes descended from Joseph, the lesser important tribe, though. Ephraim was more important. Gideon appeared to not be a very brave man. We saw last time that he was trying to thresh wheat, which he normally tried to do up in the air, down in a hole in the ground in a wine press. But the angel of the Lord came to this seemingly cowardly man and called him a mighty man of valor and said that he was going to save Israel, the Lord was going to save Israel through him. So Gideon is talking to this angel of the Lord, whom, as I suggested to you last time, I think is what we call a pre-incarnate form of Jesus Christ. It's the Lord himself come to talk to him. So we saw in verse 17, "Then he," that is Gideon, "said to him," the angel, "if now I have found favor in your sight, then show me a sign that it is you who talk with me. Do not depart from here, I pray, until I come to you and bring out my offering and set it before you." And he said, "I will wait until you come back." So Gideon wanted a sign before he would believe what the angel said was true. But before he gets the sign, he wants to offer him a meal. And so the angel says, okay, so he goes, verse 19, "So Gideon went in and prepared a young goat, an unleavened bread, from an ephah of flour. The meat he put in a basket, and he put the broth in a pot, and he brought them out to him under the terebinth tree and presented them." So this was a nice meal for him. "But the angel of God said to him, take the meat and the unleavened bread and lay them on this rock and pour out the broth. And he did so." So he wants him to treat it like an offering, pour it out on the rock, not give it to him to eat. Verse 21, "Then the angel of the Lord put out the end of the staff that was in his hand and touched the meat and the unleavened bread, and fire rose out of the rock and consumed the meat and the unleavened bread. And the angel of the Lord departed out of his sight." So the angel reaches out, doesn't touch the meat and the bread himself, but he reaches out with a staff that he was carrying and touched it. And as soon as he did that, fire came out of the rock and burnt up the offering. Now, this was a common thing when people would bring offerings to the Lord back then, is that the Lord would answer by fire. And that was a sign that he had accepted the sacrifice. He would actually send his own fire to burn it. In fact, in the temple, they were supposed to keep the fire burning, because they weren't supposed to just light their own fire. That was called profane fire, just common worldly fire. Whereas the fire that had come from the Lord was holy fire. And only in the holy fire was allowed for offering to the Lord. So this angel of the Lord brings fire out of the rock, which burns up this meat and the unleavened bread. And then the angel of the Lord departed out of his sight. We would say he disappeared. Verse 22, "Now Gideon perceived that he was the angel of the Lord. So Gideon said, 'Alas, O Lord God, for I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face.'" So now Gideon fully realizes that this was the angel of the Lord in person. Remember earlier we had noted that Gideon says to him, "O Lord, O Jehovah," as if he knew it was Jehovah himself he was talking to. But maybe he didn't. Maybe he just thought this was his messenger, and the messenger's giving a message. This is what Jehovah says. So he answers, "O Jehovah," you know, answering the message. Not necessarily thinking this messenger was Jehovah. But now he realizes it, and now he's afraid, knowing just who it is he has seen face to face. So he cries out to Adonai Jehovah. Alas, because he's seen this angel of the Lord face to face. He's afraid maybe he's going to die. Verse 23, then the Lord said to him, peace be with you. Do not fear. You shall not die. So the Lord speaks and reassures him. Now this is interesting because the Lord has disappeared. Was he still there, just invisible and speaking to him? Or is he speaking to him from heaven? Is he giving the miracle of the voice? So he hears a voice even though no one's there. Well, hard to say, but he hears Jehovah's voice. And he says, peace be with you. And peace, we think of that as just tranquility. Not being upset, not being afraid. But in the Bible, peace has to do with a union. A true union with someone. Peace between people is a true union. Or it can just be overall good health and in a good situation. Shalom is the word the Jews use to mean that, just overall goodness. And he says to him, do not fear, you're not going to die, even though you've seen the angel of the Lord face to face. It's not going to kill you. And of course, it wouldn't make sense that it would, since the angel of the Lord is going to use him. He's not going to kill him, but he wants to use him. Verse 24. So Gideon built an altar there to the Lord and called it, the Lord is peace. To this day, it is still in Ophrah of the Abiezrites. So Gideon now realizes that this is the angel of the Lord he has spoken to. So he builds an altar there to Jehovah Shalom, which means the Lord is peace. Or Jehovah Yahweh is peace. And that's where he sacrificed. It seemed he thought he should make a further sacrifice. But this tells us that to this day it is still there in this place where he lived, Ophrah of the Abiezrites. Well, now the Lord is going to start giving him missions. And the first mission is not to go against the Midianites, but the first mission has to do with his own people. Verse 25, now it came to pass the same night that the Lord said to him, take your father's young bull, the second bull of 7 years old, and tear down the altar of Baal that your father has, and cut down the wooden image that is beside it. So the Lord orders him to take his father's bull and a second 7-year-old bull. And he is to use these two bulls to destroy the altar of Baal. And Baal, again, was the false god. Baal means master, and these were the master idols that Israel would worship. So he says, using these bulls, and they'll probably have to pull and yank and tear. They'll chain the bulls to the stones, and then the bulls will pull the stones down one by one. So he's to use these bulls to tear down the altar of Baal. Now, it's not just any altar of Baal, it's his father's altar. So his father is not only complicit, he it seems is a leader in this unfaithfulness of worshiping Baal instead of Jehovah. Now, he's not just to destroy the Baal altar, but he's also to cut down the wooden image that is beside it. Now, this wooden image is the Asherah pole. And the Asherah pole was the foulest kind of Canaanite idolatry. What this was is typically they would take a tree, they would lop the top and the branches off of it, and they would carve it into the shape of an upright male organ. And typically you worship the Asherah by having prostitute priestesses or priests underneath it, and you would pay to visit these prostitute priests or priestesses, and that was worshiping Asherah. So this was total perversion of the Canaanites, and the Israelites had stooped to accepting it and participating in it. So he is to cut down this foul thing, this Asherah, along with the altar of Baal. Then verse 26, and build an altar to the Lord your God on top of this rock in the proper arrangement, and take the second bull and offer a burnt sacrifice with the wood of the image which you shall cut down. So it seems in verse 24, when it talks about him building an altar to the Lord, that was giving us a little bit ahead, because here's where he builds the altar to the Lord. He's to build it on top of that rock. It seems it's the very rock where the angel had him set down the meal, and then the fire came out and burned it up. So he builds an altar there to the Lord, using the proper arrangement, which typically was to use 12 stones, one for each of the 12 tribes of Israel. And then he is to take the second bull, the one that didn't belong to his father, maybe it belonged to him, and offer a burnt sacrifice there and use the wood from the Asherah pole. So this supposedly sacred symbol, he says, use the wood to offer the offering. Show that it's just wood. It's got nothing to do with any goddess called Asherah. Verse 27, so Gideon took 10 men from among his servants and did as the Lord had said to him. But because he feared his father's household and the men of the city too much to do it by day, he did it by night. So Gideon obeys, although he doesn't do it by himself. He takes 10 of his servants and has them join him. Well, I suppose it would be a lot of work tearing down this altar and cutting down the Asherah pole. And he is also afraid of his father and of his household and also the people of the city. Because, of course, they all worshipped at this altar of Baal, and they all worshipped at this Asherah pole. And so he doesn't want to just march out and boldly do this by day. He thinks they'll try to stop him, or maybe even try to kill him for destroying their objects of worship. So he secretly does it by night. Well, again, we see Gideon. He's gaining some courage anyway. At least he's not trying to thresh in a wine press. But he still is not exactly Mr. Courage. He does this by night in secret. Well, it seems that he had good reason to fear, as we see in the next verse, verse 28. And when the men of the city arose early in the morning, there was the altar of Baal torn down, and the wooden image that was beside it was cut down, and the second bull was being offered on the altar which had been built. So the men of the city wake up in the morning, and he's done this secretly at night. And in the morning they discover, oh no, our altar to Baal has been destroyed. And our Asherah pole has been cut down. And here's a new altar built and a bull sacrificed on it. Verse 29. So they said one to another, who has done this thing? And when they had inquired and asked, they said, Gideon, the son of Joash, has done this thing. So they look into this. They're upset. They want to know who's done it. And somehow they discover it was Gideon. Now, I don't think he told them, so perhaps they were seen. I mean, they must have made some noise, however quiet they tried to be. Or perhaps one of these 10 servants had blabbed. You know, they cornered him and asked, do you know anything about it? And he broke down and admitted it. Verse 30. Then the men of the city said to Joash, bring out your son that he may die, because he has torn down the altar of Baal, and because he has cut down the wooden image that was beside it. So they come to Joash, Gideon's father, and they demand that he turn over Gideon to them so that he can be executed for having destroyed these idols. Now, the interesting thing is, if we would ask, does Gideon deserve to die here? No. But if we ask the further question, who does deserve to die? The Lord said this in Deuteronomy chapter 13 and verse 12. If you hear someone in one of your cities, which the Lord your God gives you to dwell in, saying, corrupt men have gone out from among you and enticed the inhabitants of their city, saying, let us go and serve other gods, which you have not known. Then you shall inquire, search out, and ask diligently. And if it is indeed true and certain that such an abomination was committed among you, you shall surely strike the inhabitants of that city with the edge of the sword, utterly destroying it, all that is in it and its livestock, with the edge of the sword. And you shall gather all its plunder into the middle of the street and completely burn with fire the city and all its plunder, for the Lord your God. It shall be a heap forever. It shall not be built again. So the reality was, these men, in their judgment, Gideon deserved to die. But in God's judgment, it was the men of this city. Every single inhabitant of that city deserved to die for having worshipped Baal and Asherah. The only person in the city who didn't deserve to die was Gideon. It was these men and their families and everyone in the city who deserved to die. So they want Gideon executed, when in fact they are the ones who deserve to be executed, every last one of them. Well, that shows the wicked men how perverse and how twisted their judgment is. Now, what does Joash, Gideon's father, do about this? After all, it was his idol that his son tore down. But it seems that Joash wants to save his son. Verse 31, but Joash said to all who stood against him, would you plead for Baal? Would you save him? Let the one who would plead for him be put to death by morning. If he is a god, let him plead for himself, because his altar has been torn down. So it seems that Joash, his father, while I don't think he probably liked having his idol torn down, he still stands up for his son. He doesn't want him killed, and he does it in a clever way. He says that these men are actually insulting Baal by pleading for him and trying to save him. He argues that it's those who do this who ought to be put to death, because if Baal is a god, he should be able to plead for his own altar. He should be able to watch out for himself. He says, you're watching out for Baal? Let him watch out for himself. You're insulting him by trying to watch out for him. Verse 32, therefore on that day he called him Jerubbaal, saying, let Baal plead against him, because he has torn down his altar. So it seems that the people of the city agree to this. It makes sense to them. And we see how fickle they are. First blow one way, then another. Instead of course, being loyal to the Lord as they ought to have been. But on this day, it seems Gideon is given a new name, and that name is Jerubbaal, which means let Baal plead. Let Baal plead with him. Let Baal plead his case. Well, that pretty much let Gideon off the hook. Why? Well, because Baal was a false god. And so he couldn't plead his own case, and so he never did. So thus, through the cleverness of his father, Gideon survived the wrath of his idolatrous townsmen. Now the Lord has watched out for Gideon, and he's given him a sign, the fire that burned up his offering. But now, the trouble, the very issue that the Lord called Gideon to deal with, comes up once again, verse 33. Then all the Midianites and Amalekites, the people of the east, gathered together, and they crossed over and encamped in the valley of Jezreel. So here come the Midianites. Again, that nation descended from Abraham through his wife Keturah, whom he married after Sarah's death. And the Midianites are joined by the Canaanite Amalekites. And these are the people of the east, the peoples who lived east of Israel. Now, the Amalekites was a Canaanite nation, and one that the Lord found particularly offensive. And he actually told Moses he would have war with the Amalekites forever. And he would deal with the Amalekites, and he did. Eventually, they were completely wiped out. And the Lord did that because of their wickedness. The Lord was incensed when they followed the camp of Israel, where the stragglers were, the very young or the very old or the sick, and they killed the stragglers. And the Lord was incensed and promised that he would kill the Amalekites. And eventually he did. Although graciously, he didn't do it right away. But these Amalekites are always siding with God's enemies and never with God's friends. And they now side with the Midianites. And they all come and camp in the valley of Jezreel. Jezreel means God sows. And it was actually the name of two locations in Israel. There was one in the south in Judah, but this one was the one in the north. It was in Issachar, near Mount Gilboa. Well, why are these Midianites and Amalekites coming? Well, remember, the reason they came is that they actually went through Israel and wiped out their crops, wiped out their food supply. It seemed, like I said, that they were trying to cause Israel to die out. Well, every year when the crops come up, they have to come and do it again until Israel, you know, they're trying to hide what little crops they can and survive another year. Well, they're coming to do it again in their attempt to wipe Israel out. Verse 34. But the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon. Then he blew the trumpet, and the Abiezrites gathered behind him. So the Spirit of Yahweh steps in and comes upon Gideon. And according to the Companion Bible, comes upon here means that he clothed him, or he came on him to fill him. So he's clothed or filled by the Spirit. And so he blows a trumpet. And the trumpet at the time was the way you gathered the troops. So it was a summons to Israel. Well, the Spirit of God is supporting him, and the summons works. The Abiezrites gather behind him. Those same people who wanted to kill him a little while ago, they now join him in wanting to fight the Amalekites. Verse 35, and he sent messengers throughout all Manasseh, who also gathered behind him. He also sent messengers to Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali, and they came up to meet them. So he gathers from multiple northern tribes. Manasseh, his own tribe, was a large tribe. It more or less spread all the way across Israel from east to west. Now north and west along Manasseh's border was Asher, along the northwest coast of Israel, along the Mediterranean Sea. Zebulun was southeast of Asher, and Naphtali was north and east of Zebulun. So these four tribes gather together. But it seems that Gideon isn't quite ready to believe it, verse 36. So Gideon said to God, "If you will save Israel by my hand as you have said." So he wants another sign. The fire on the rock wasn't enough. Verse 37. "Look, I shall put a fleece of wool on the threshing floor, and if there is dew on the fleece only, and it is dry on all the ground, then I shall know that you will save Israel by my hand, as you have said." So he puts out a fleece, and he puts it up in the air on a threshing floor. Remember, this was a raised platform. Now we know that the reason dew collects at night is it collects on the ground because the ground is cold, colder than the air, and so the water condenses on the ground. But why would it not gather on the ground and yet gather on a fleece up in the air? Where, of course, the fleece wouldn't be colder than the air up on a threshing floor. Well, that wouldn't make sense. So he says, if this happens, it'll be a sign that you're with me and are going to save Israel by my hand. Verse 38, "And it was so. When he rose early the next morning and squeezed the fleece together, he wrung the dew out of the fleece, a bowl full of water." So just as he had asked in his prayer to the Lord, there's water on the fleece and none on the ground. And in fact, there's actually a full bowl full of water in this woolen fleece. But it seems Gideon gets to thinking, he thinks, well, what if I calculated it wrong somehow, and there's some unknown reason why wool would want to collect dew when the ground doesn't? And so he decides he wants to make sure. So verse 39, "Then Gideon said to God, 'Do not be angry with me.'" Seems he realizes he's being kind of annoying. "But let me speak just once more. Let me test, I pray, just once more with the fleece. Let it now be dry only on the fleece, but on all the ground let there be dew." So he says, if you do it backwards, then I know it's not some weird natural phenomenon that I didn't know about that caused this. Verse 40, "And God did so that night. It was dry on the fleece only, but there was dew on all the ground." So God bears with Gideon and his kind of cowardly asking for sign after sign, and does the opposite. The fleece is dry and the ground is wet, as you would have expected it to be. Now, this sort of thing that Gideon did is the kind of thing that people notice and will often try for themselves. And I think especially children who are brought up, taught this Bible story, they want to try this. And I did myself as a child. And I said, "God, if this is going to happen, make the next car down the road a red one. But if not, let it be some other color." And then the next car comes, and it's not a red one, but I wanted it to be red. So I said, "Okay, God, how about the next car?" And then the next car is red, and it's like, all right, God said yes. Well, but even back then, I kind of realized I was being a little silly. The first car wasn't red. But people will do this. And children especially, and maybe sometimes children in the Lord, young believers, will try this sort of thing. But generally, like for me, it doesn't work. Or if it works, you don't even want to believe it. But understand, we have to realize several things about this. Even if it does work, quote-unquote, is that it's just a coincidence. Because the fact is that Gideon, for one thing, was an Israelite. And God worked with Israel through signs. And we don't live in the same dispensation that Gideon did. We live in a day when God is silent. And he's not manifestly showing his will through signs like this. Moreover, as much as we would like to think of ourselves and think how great we must be, you know, the world centers around me, well, the fact is we are not Gideon. Gideon was God's choice to be Israel's judge, a leader of God's people. God was asking him to do something great, and he had every right to ask for a sign for proof. But God never asked me to do anything that he didn't ask every other believer to do. So I have no reason for God to prove to me he wants me to do something special. He wants me to do what he wants everybody to do. And I'm not anything like a chosen judge, nor are you. Today I believe all believers are one in Christ. And no person has a privileged position or a special job that other believers don't have. It's our job to proclaim the word and believe the gospel and this sort of thing. But that's the mission of all of us. God hasn't chosen any one of us to be the leader and have a special position and do a special valiant work. So we take this right upon ourselves to ask God this sort of thing, but I think God pretty much just ignores it. You know, flip the coin whether or not the next car over the hill will be the color you want or not. God isn't going to answer that way. But in this portion, we see that Gideon, though a cowardly man, the Lord told him he would be mighty, the reason being that he would be with him. Gideon obeyed Jehovah, but he lacked confidence, carrying out his will in secret. He gathered Israel, and God was helping him, but then he's just a little bit afraid and asks for a further sign that Yahweh will be with him. Well, today, we should believe God, but God doesn't offer us signs. Will we believe his word? Do we have the kind of faith that believes without seeing? I pray that we do.
The Lord worked signs and miracles as he moved and guided his chosen nation, Israel. God will not acquiesce to our misguided requests for similar things. God is working differently in our lives today. This distinction will become clear when we gain an understanding of God's present purposes in this present dispensation of grace. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on the courage of Gideon. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of Judges with the victory of Gideon. Thank you for joining us today. Our hope is that as you listen to this program, you are becoming more and more motivated to study God's Word. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread Bible studies, please visit the Word of Truth Ministry at seedandbread.org. I'm your host, Bob Juneau, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. We'll say so long for now, but as usual, we always look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.